Well, good morning, everyone. It's a fine morning to worship our God. If you want to take out your Bibles and open up to Ephesians chapter 4, page 1172 in the Pew Bibles. The English language is kind of a curious thing. So often we even have words in our English language that are really defining something that is missing. Maybe you think about the terms like silence. Is literally the absence of sound. Cold is literally the absence of heat. And maybe you even think further about darkness is truly just the absence of light. And when you start thinking along the ideas of the new self, rejuvenated in the way that we think in our mind, think about what true mental health is, that mental sickness is really the absence of Jesus' thinking. It's moving in the opposite direction. And so often nowadays people talk about mental health and yet never come around to the genuine ideas of what really is mental health. Paul has been talking about these things for thousands of years through the annals of what we have in the book of Ephesians. And other places in Romans. But to really take the time to look at Jesus, would you say the way that Jesus thinks and his motives are genuinely true mental health? Of how he goes about things, what he's motivated from, how he interacts with people, and to see, is that truly what we desire? Now, look at verse 20. You'll see it here. He says, but you did not learn Christ in this way. What if we're not mentally trying to imitate Jesus? Where does it really leave us? And he's already talked about that in the previous few verses, about it'll leave us hardened. It'll leave us darkened in our understanding, which if we're being darkened, it means we're absence of light. Think about even beyond of going futile in mind, we get calloused. We get hard-hearted, and you go, all those things are tied to what we would probably talk about as mental sickness. They're not going to allow us to truly function to imitate Jesus. Now, he says it here in verse 20, if we're not really looking at Jesus, he says we're only going to get sicker and sicker and sicker. It doesn't just plateau and stay the same. Because notice verse 21. He says, if indeed you have heard him and have been taught in him, just as truth is in Jesus. Notice how he brings up another one of these if statements in the book of Ephesians. He says, if you've really heard Jesus, and that's an active idea of listening to a teacher, and then even in terms of a passive, to have been taught by him, to take in what's being said, to go, if indeed this is what you have done, do you realize that truth is in Jesus? That if you want anything to genuinely work at its highest function, it has to work according to Christ. How many times in terms of deception, what does truth do to deception? Have you ever made the mistake of maybe seeing a product that's sold in the stores, has these great promises of what it'll do, and you go, you know what, it's really not that expensive, I'll pick it up, and you buy it, and you take it home, and you go, it does nothing about what it promised to do. And you go, truth, all of a sudden, completely trumps anything that has to do with deception. And to realize, have we come to that conclusion about how we think, and how we go about things? And so he says, we can't really claim to listen to Jesus. We can't really claim to have been taught him these principles. Maybe you think in terms of like Matthew chapter 7, where it talks about the one who hears the words of Jesus and acts upon them is the one that finds stability. They even find mental stability through the biggest challenges of life and the biggest storms. And going, are we really going to learn this from Jesus? Is truth really in him? Or are we going to start looking somewhere else and to see what's going to happen to us mentally and the way that we think? And then you come to verse 22. He says that in reference to your former manner of life, you lay aside the old self, which is being corrupted in accordance with the lusts of deceit. He says, when you truly come to see Jesus for who he is and what he is, it says, you know what? There has to be a change. I remember one time talking to an older man, and he says, you know, I was in Christ a good decade before I ever heard about putting off the old self. Which, in my mind, is what a great shame in terms of going, what's being taught. But on the other hand, the misery that you go through for those times where we're just hanging on to things that are really against us in terms of the principles that are at hand. If you think about it here, he says that in reference to your former manner of life, you lay aside the old self. And it really makes it sound like just taking off clothes. Like, don't you know that it's time to take off those rags? You have clothes that are here hanging in the closet that are much more refined. They will keep you warmer. They will keep you covered from the sun. They will take care of you. And you go, but all we're keeping on are these things that have no benefit. And he says that you lay it, looking at your former manner of life, where you were before you came to Christ, are you going to keep on doing things the same way? He says, because that's not really according to Christ, to listen to him and to be taught by him. He says, these old ways. And next week, as chapter 4 goes on, he'll be very specific about these things. He'll talk about, are you going to speak the truth? What about your anger? What about what you do with the goods that you have? What about your words? What about your motives? What about raging inside of you? He's going to hit on all those specific things as what's coming next week in the book of Ephesians. But you look here, and he makes this statement, lay aside the old self. Do you notice the phrase he says, which is being corrupted? In other words, it's not getting any better. How many of us had this experience before we came to Christ? We thought, I'll do this. I have a way to do this. I've got my mind made up. And all of a sudden, every time you touch it, it just gets worse. And you go, I'm trying everything I know, is the way we think. But the problem is we don't know much because our way of thinking was very futile, useless. The way that we understand things was very dark because the light of God was not part of them. Our hearts were very hard, so with the things that were the real answers, we didn't move on. And we wondered why we suffered in our minds with all these different problems in terms of anxieties and worries and distresses, and things mounted up higher and higher and higher until we finally gave up and we said, God, I need something bigger than me. And God says, have you considered my son? Have you considered his thinking? Have you considered his ways? And then if you notice at the end of this verse, he says, which is being corrupted in accordance with the lusts of deceit. Do you realize that deceit actually has a desire? I hope we're not deceptive people. We're certainly not called to be. We're called to be just the opposite. But if we were ever deceptive in the past, did you ever think about why? Remember, we were young and we got caught with our hand in the cookie jar and we're chewing the cookie and the crumbles are on our mouth and the chocolate stains from the chocolate chips are right there on our face and we get asked, did you eat a cookie? How foolish we look, but why in that moment, what's the lust of deceit? What are we hoping for? Maybe you'll see me as innocent. That's why a lot of people lie. They want to appear to be something they genuinely are not. It's one of the lusts of deceit. Maybe you can think about plenty of illustrations of this through the New Testament. In Acts chapter 5, you have Ananias and Sapphira. They see the praise that Barnabas is receiving because he sold a tract of land and they're going, you know what? We want to be seen by people to be spiritually minded, but we really don't want to be. And they sell a piece of property and they act as if they sold it for a certain price when in all actuality they made more. And they bring it forward as if to say, maybe people will praise us. And they lay it at the feet of the apostles. Why? What was the lust of deceit? What was the desire? We want to be seen to be something we're not. We want to be seen as spiritual. And you go, oh. I mean, have you ever ran into someone who they wear all the religious garb, but then all of a sudden what comes out of their mouth is filthy? And you go, that's interesting. Why wear the garb if it's really not going to be who they are? You can think through other stories in terms of wanting to impress people. Sometimes deceit has that mindset behind it. In the book of Acts, chapter 19, there's seven sons of a Jewish priest by the name of Sceva. And they see that the apostles are casting out demons. And they decide that in the city of Ephesus, we can do that too. And they step in to cast out these unclean spirits. And one of the spirits says, I know who Jesus is, and I know who Paul is, but I don't know who you are. And then they beat the tar out of those seven sons, and they even to the point where they flee out of the house naked. All because they wanted to try and impress that we have the same thing as what God's people have. And you go, wow. And because of it, truth unveiled exactly the deceit. There's lust of deceit. Maybe you even think in like John chapter 12, where here's Jesus just a few days before he's going to be crucified. And Mary comes in with a very expensive alabaster perfume, pure nard. And as she puts it upon Jesus, the aroma actually fills the whole house. Here they are looking at this and going, you know what? It would take a whole year's worth of wages to pay for this. And Judas, out of disgust, why is this being wasted? And it puts off this desire of deceit. Like, I'm being spiritually minded. We could have given this money to the poor. And in all actuality, he's a thief. And he steals money out of the little purse or box that they keep to help take care of their needs as they go. Guys, the desire of deceit is always to go away from truth. The one thing that deceit and lies fear the most is truth. And the way that we think has to be looking directly at Jesus and not just listening and learning, but actually turning into doing. And how we process things. So, you see these points at hand. This is what mental sickness looks like. Because whenever you see the light of Jesus, it takes care of those things. Mental sickness is the absence of who Jesus is. Now, that's not some political statement. I'm just telling you, this is what's here. We understand what it means with silence. We understand what it means with cold. We understand what it means in terms of darkness. But do we see it in terms of, am I learning this from Jesus, this thinking? He says, am I ready to lay aside the old self? He says, to really look at Jesus, because this corrupt way of thinking is only going to get worse and worse and worse. Kind of like looking at a rusted car sitting out in the field. It's not going to get any better. Now, notice how it comes on to continue. Verse 23. He says, and that you be renewed in the spirit of your mind. He says, there has to be a renewal. Something has to be moved and changed. He says, and it's in the spirit of the mind. Are we going to work off of the spirit of God? Or are we going to work off of our own spirit? Or even the old self? Because as long as we're going to work off of the old self and the old spirit, what's going to happen? Things just keep on getting worse and worse and worse. The corruption just takes over more and more and more. We really need to learn to think about these old ways really in a similar way that we think of cancer. When cancer is present and growing, If it is unattended to, what is the result? We've seen it. We know the outcome. Do we really see these principles of deceit and lying and go, you know what? All these desires will only kill me in the end. They will never make me better. People say fight fire with fire. I've never heard somebody say fight cancer with cancer. And I think we realize why. Now he says you have to be renewed in the thinking of your mind. And the renewal is, are we going to move Godward in our thinking? Or are we going to turn self-centered? Are we going to look out for what we desire? Now he talks here about being Godward in terms of being renewed. And the term literally means to make young again. How many people are looking for that physically? I want to be young again. But to go spiritually, do you know that this is actually possible? That we can be renewed. Sometimes you maybe hear these stories about someone will find an old classic car that's been put in a barn and it's been there for like 50 or 60 or 70 years. And they roll that thing out and they decide, you know what, we're going to renew this car. We're going to clean it all up. And they take all the mud and the dust and the dirt and the debris off of it. And they go in and they condition the seats so that whenever you sit in them, they don't crack. And you go, look at what happens. It was there all along. What Jesus has to offer has been here ever since the first day you breathed. But now are we really going to take him in? Are we going to let the aroma of Christ truly come in to take over our lives? Now, he hits upon this as he continues. He says that you be renewed in the spirit of your mind. Then look at verse 24. He says, and put on the new self, which in the likeness of God has been created in righteousness and holiness of the truth. He says, put on the new self. It doesn't say, and God will put the new self on you. This is where it's going to require us to make a response to God. I have to be looking at Jesus to find, what are the aspects of my thinking that need to change? When I start looking around and going, am I going to hold on to grudges and bitterness to where I would slander people and be angry and be unforgiving? That's all old self thinking, because you didn't learn that from Jesus. And that's really the litmus test of every aspect of our thinking. Can you find this thinking in Jesus? Because if you can't find it in him, it is not going to take you to what's genuinely true in our thinking. A true spiritual mindset. He says, you don't learn those things from Jesus. What do you learn from Jesus? Will we show people kindness? They treat us wrong. Will we respond with words that are right? People are angry toward us. Will we seek peace instead of vengeance? Will we be a forgiving people, even if it comes at great pain? You look at Jesus, the pain that he endured just to be forgiving, to pay our price. And you go, this is the new self. You start really looking through it. Maybe it goes back to an old illustration in terms of like a watermelon farmer. He starts to realize that some of his prized watermelons are disappearing. And so he gets out back and he starts to see these thieves that are coming in to steal his watermelons. Old way of thinking says what? Fill the shotgun full of salt and let's fire a few shots and let's make sure they don't come back. Renewed thinking says, let's go have a conversation. And if they're willing to go in the right direction, I'll give you the watermelons for free. Because I know in the end of the produce season, I'm going to have far more than I can eat. A drastic difference between old self and new self thinking. So you start looking at this, and he says, we're going to have to put on the new self. And to find that new self, you're going to have to really look at Jesus. And we're going to also have to be truthful. We're going to have to be honest with ourselves. Stop giving ourselves excuses as to why, oh, that really doesn't apply to me, or I don't really have to do that, go that far. Because if we start making excuses, corruption starts coming in. What sin is okay? There isn't one. But aren't we grateful for the grace and mercy of God to forgive us? As we strive to grow up into this mindset, for our mind to truly be renewed in our thinking. Now, notice what else is here in verse 24. He says, this new self, he says, has been created in the likeness of God. And this word for create is a word that literally only God can do. This is not something of, okay, I'm going to give this to you and you use it. It's, as you put forth the effort, I will create the likeness. I'll give you what you need. And if you stop to think about it for a half a moment, haven't we been created in the image of God? Isn't this body, wasn't it made in a way that's made, tailor-made, to put on the very likeness of who Jesus is? And he says, are you willing to lay aside the old and put on the new? He says, because it's in the likeness of God. And it's what you've been made to be. So often people wonder, what is my part in this world? You were made to put on the likeness of Jesus. That is literally what we were made for. To put on his mindset and his character. Then he makes 2 points here at the end of verse 24. He says, has been created in righteousness and holiness of the truth. And when you think about righteousness and holiness, who should we be looking at? Anyone other than Jesus? He's the one that you see righteousness in. He's the one that you see holiness in. In terms of going, he's going to respond and do what's right. I mean, you think about for the disciples that were with Jesus. Here's Jesus, and all of a sudden you're going, well, we'd never talk to that dirty old Samaritan woman. We would never give her anything. Then we would be made unclean. Jesus goes and has a conversation. What was Jesus putting in front of them? You want to learn from me? Is there any group of people that you look at and go, well, you know, they're just worthless people? It's funny, Nathanael said that about Jesus. Can any good thing come from Nazareth? Was he right or wrong? He was wrong. Sometimes the preconceptions aren't right. We don't learn those from Jesus. We learn truth and righteousness and holiness. He says, that's what these things are aimed after. Something else here, if you notice in verse 24, it says, and put on the new self. This word for new is not something new in time. It's not as if this mindset of Christ has not been around since the day that we were born. You go, the mindset of Christ has been around for almost 2,000 years now. And yet it's brand new to us, isn't it? This word for new also carries with the idea of something that we have not really grown accustomed to, or it's of a different nature than what we're used to. Yeah, because the new self's not like the old self. They don't have an overlapping aspect. He says, to really learn these things from who Jesus is. Now, I want to give you a few more illustrations about this so that we can probably kind of let the rubber hit the road. Look back at the book of Romans, Romans chapter 12, page 1136. Romans chapter 12, look at verse 1. We'll go through these kind of quick. Sometimes there are old things that have been in place for a long time, but we just lost track of them. It's almost like trying to teach a teenager now how to drive a manual shift. Those things have been around for a long time. But if you're unaccustomed, it takes some getting used to. Now, Romans chapter 12, look at verse 1. Paul writes, therefore I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. This is how we offer ourselves to God on a daily basis. Holy and living. Righteous and holy. Verse 2. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. He says, stop trying to fit in with the old self and with the world. He says, lay aside the old self, put on the new self. He says, if you're looking to learn from the world the right ways, you'll get corrupted pretty quick. And all of a sudden, we'll find the cancer that takes us through these horrible spiritual things. Then he takes it on. He says, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. If you stop and think in terms of this, and this is, I think, more popularly known now, but going, this Greek word for transform is where we get our English word for metamorphosis, that process that the caterpillar goes through to become the butterfly. Do you know that what's there in presence was already in place in what God put in the genes that are there of what's present in that caterpillar? What was its purpose? Purpose was to become a butterfly. Old self, which one would you, how would you rather travel? Feet on the ground or being able to fly over above? Now you stop and think about it. This is what's available to us. New self, renewed in thinking of mind. He says, I can take you from something that is a dirty earth crawler, and I can take you to something beautiful that people love. People stand amazed when all those monarch butterflies go down south and migrate. Billions of them. He says, you can't be conformed to the world. He says, let's look at Jesus. Look at how things are in his mindset. He says, so that you may prove or discover what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. He says, now you will discover. Because the thinking is going to be Christ-like, now you discover. You discover not only how to forgive, you discover how to now show grace. You discover how to give beyond what is just forgiveness and mercy. Oh, we're really starting to grow into the mindset of Jesus. He says, and do this as your daily service of worship. Then, notice how it continues on. Look at verse 3. These first aspects. He says, you can learn what's good and acceptable and perfect. Let's see, who would that fit? Would that fit the mindset of Jesus? To be have true mental health? Good, perfect, acceptable? Verse 3. He says, for through the grace given to me, I say to everyone among you not to think more highly of himself as he ought to think, but to think so as to have sound judgment, as God has allotted to each a measure of faith. He says, here's where it starts. If you want to really capture the thinking of Jesus, stop thinking so much about yourself. Don't think so highly of yourself. The creator of the universe came down in the form of man. He didn't think so highly of himself. He became made in his own likeness. He put on his own nature. Look at what he did, and he put others ahead of himself. Learn the mindset from Jesus. Then if you notice, he says, don't think more highly of yourself than you ought to so that you can have sound judgment. Because when you think highly of yourself, what does it do to your judgment calls? They'll be terrible, and you won't even know it. That's the hard part. Look down a little bit further. Look down at verse 9. Let love be without hypocrisy. Stop pretending. Don't go, well, I'll just pretend like I'm loving, and then it'll be okay. He says, no, it can't be hypocritical. You can't go, well, I'm just going to love certain people. He says, no, you can't be hypocritical. He says, let love be without hypocrisy. Let it be genuine. Look within the heart to find genuine love. And genuine love is usually shown when the enemy is present. When turmoil shows up. When there's an argument. Who's going to be loving? Who's going to step up and represent the mindset of Jesus to be loving and to give a gentle answer and to speak the truth? Notice how he continues. He says, abhor what is evil, cling to what is good. He says, be devoted to one another in brotherly love. Give preference to one another in honor. Rather than me being honored, let me honor you. Let me honor you. When you look at Jesus, do you ever see him going, oh, don't honor me. Don't honor me. You'll never get mixed messages from him. Who is he going to honor? I'm going to honor my Father. And I'm going to honor you. You're worthy of my time. And how often he's willing to sacrifice for others, even with his time. He says, I don't have to be honored here. He says, I will be honored. God will honor me. Our worship will be toward him. Then, as he continues on, verse 11, he says, not lagging behind in diligence, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. Once again, this is Lord aimed. Verse 12, rejoicing in hope. Let the hope bring about a joy within. Because without joy, we won't keep going. And notice the next aspect. It says, persevering in tribulation, devoted to prayer. Will you keep going with this mindset? Will you keep on letting it grow within the heart and the thinking that we have? Otherwise, we're just going to keep on being corrupted and moving backwards. He says, be devoted to prayer. Am I working together with God or am I working against him? It's okay for him to say no. His wisdom's higher. Verse 13, he says, contributing to the needs of the saints, practicing hospitality. He says, all of a sudden you look around and you go, you know what? I see needs. I'll sacrifice my wants for the benefit of your needs. That's agape love. You don't learn that from a self-centered world. You learn that from a Savior who said, I'll have this mindset. And it's because of this mindset that we have life. Because if Jesus didn't have that mindset, where would we be? Hopeless. Destined for ruin. What kind of mindset do you want? You want a mindset that works off of sickness? Off of the old self? Or do we want to lay aside the old self and be renewed in the thinking of our mind and put on the new self? We may be unaccustomed to it. It'll take growth. And God says, I have created it in righteousness and holiness of the truth so that you can respond to me, to have my mindset, and to live a life that honors me. And I will bless you. I'll bless you with eternal life. I'll bless you with physical things to provide what you need. And I'll even give you sometimes more so that you can look out to share with others who have a need that you know.